WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The makers of Apocalypse Now were said to have run into some of the same problems that faced the men who fought the war. Once they got in, they got deeper and deeper and couldn't pull themselves out. The 1992 documentary called Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse, showed how director Francis Coppola dealt with recreating jungle warfare in the Philippines during a real civil war. There were times Coppola was sure he could not make a movie out of his increasingly incoherent footage.
What I have to admit is that I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, how do you account for the discrepancy between what you feel about it and what everybody else who sees it?
Because they see the magic of what has happened before. I'm saying, hey, it's not going to happen. I don't have any performances. The script doesn't make sense. I have no ending. I'm like a voice crying out, saying, please, it's not working. Somebody get me off this. And nobody listens to me. Everyone says, yes, well, Francis works best in a crisis. I'm saying this is one crisis I'm not going to pull myself out of. I'm making a bad movie, so why should I go ahead? I'm going to be bankrupt anyway. Why can't I just have the courage to say it's no good?
The documentary footage shot during the making of Apocalypse Now was directed by Eleanor Coppola, Francis's wife, at his request. She's also the author of Notes on the Making of Apocalypse Now, a book version of her journals. I spoke with her in 1992. When Marlon Brando arrived on the set to play Kurtz, Francis Coppola didn't realize that Brando was going to be as heavy as he was. How did that affect the way the role was conceived?
Well, when Francis realized that he was not slimmed down and able to play the Green Beret that he was originally, committed to the part for, that Francis had to decide what to do in the situation, and his first idea was to play Marlon as an indulging, mango-eating, over-indulging himself here in the jungle in this situation, and just play him sort of overweight and his uniform not really fitting properly, and just go with that whole kind of look. And Marlon did not want to do that. He just was unwilling to do that. So then Francis was really at a loss. What could he do then if he wouldn't do that? So the two of them sat down for days talking about what part he could play and how they could resolve this, the ending of this movie. And they at one point came up with this very theatrical, larger-than-life personage that you see, just emerging from the darkness and the light, and you never really fully see him as a reality. He's much more of a sort of an archetypical, mythical figure. And that was sort of a new approach for Brando, because he was known for his great, reality, the grittiness of his realness and his performances, so that he struggled with that too, and the two of them had a real head-to-head go there trying to resolve the ending of the film.
A lot of Marlon Brando's part was improvised. There's some really interesting footage in Hearts of Darkness of Brando improvising. Would you describe a little bit the process that he and Francis Coppola used to improvise the part?
Well, they would come up with some actual lines and some of the dialogue that Marlon was to say, but the way Marlon works is he has to find a reality, so he would then put those lines into kind of just a sort of free form improvising and talking as he went along through the part. So they had definite points that he was supposed to make, and he then kind of created around those points and kind of gives it that reality. Because one of the things he does, he, for instance, will like write a line on his hand or put it on a piece of tape on one of the props nearby, so that he sort of has to look for that line and sort of give it that little edge of struggle that just like we have in our own conversation, I don't know exactly what line I'm going to say next, and it gives my voice a kind of edgy reality because I'm sort of fishing for what the next line is going to be. And he does that. It's part of his technique to not learn his lines and just spit them out slickly, but to really just have to have that little edge of reaching for them.
It sounds from the footage you shot that one of the techniques that they'd use to improvise was that Francis Coppola would ask Marlon Brando questions off camera, and then Brando would have to respond to the questions, and the camera would be rolling as he responded.
Yes, that's right.
Why are we in Vietnam?
It's our time to grab this moment in history. It's our time to teach. Huh? I can't think of any more dialogue today.
We're listening to a 1992 interview with Eleanor Coppola, who kept a journal and produced documentary footage about the making of Apocalypse Now. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Apocalypse Now Redux began opening in theaters today. Before we hear more from Eleanor Coppola, let's hear another scene from the film. Captain Willard, played by Martin Sheen, has just arrived at the compound of the renegade Colonel Kurtz. He meets a photojournalist at the compound, played by Dennis Hopper.
Who are all these people?
Yeah, well, they think you've come to take him away, and I hope that isn't true.
Take who away?
Him! Colonel Kurtz. These are all his children, man, as far as you can see. Hell, man, out here, we're all his children.
Could we, talk to Colonel Kurtz?
Hey, man, you don't talk to the Colonel, Well, you listen to him. The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I mean, sometimes he'll, you'll say hello to him, right? And he'll just walk right by you, and he won't even notice you. And then suddenly he'll grab you, and he'll throw you in a corner, and he'll say, do you know that if is the middle word in life? If you can keep your head when all about you losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you. I mean, I can't. I'm a little man. He's a great man. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across floors of silent seas. I mean,
stay with the book.
Don't go without me, okay? I want to get a picture.
Dennis Hopper played the part of a really drugged out American journalist in Vietnam. When he was cast in this role, he already had the reputation for being genuinely drugged out and burned out. And there's some terrific footage in the documentary of him and Francis Coppola talking together and trying to, like, work out what the part's going to be. And Coppola wants to know how come he doesn't know his lines yet. Why did Coppola even bring on Dennis Hopper? And I'm a really big fan of Hopper's asking this question, but he was in such bad shape then. You know, you wonder, why would you ask for this kind of trouble?
Well, I don't think Francis actually realized he was in that kind of shape. He thought he was a really good actor, and he had a lot of admiration for him, and he was cast in a role, a Green Beret role, and when he really got out there, Francis realized there's no way that he could play this the Green Beret, and he had to then sort of invent a part for him because he thought he was very talented and there must be some way to use his gifts. And so Francis has the great ability to make the part fit the actor rather than the other way around. If the actor comes and can't play the part as written, he rewrites the part, and he certainly did that in Dennis's case, and tried to somehow utilize the character that he was, because that was one of the issues in the Vietnam War, is the use of drugs and the availability of drugs. And in fact, there in the Philippines, because of where we were there in Asia, there were drugs available and cheaply, and things that aren't available just here in while everybody's home in Los Angeles, so that there was experimentation among the people who were out there. And Dennis, of course, was just really far out at that moment. In fact, he looks back at that period and is pretty astounded himself, I think.
See, why didn't you say that to him in the scene?
Who?
Something clever like that. When
you
he says,
why?
Who are you?
You
why didn't you say, who are you?
Because I haven't learned my lines yet.
I know,
that's
you've
why.
Had him for 5 days.
The other thing I'd like to say is that...
These glasses,
I can't see anything through them. But, like, you know, every crack represents a life I've saved. You know what I mean? They represent a life I've saved.
All that in the scene.
I do, but you see, the director, you know, the director says, you don't know your lines. And then, like,
well,
you know,
if you know your lines, then you can forget them.
Oh,
you know more or less.
I see. But that's what I'm trying to do. Forget those lines.
No, but it's not fair to forget them if you never knew them.
One of the stories that the movie gets into, the documentary on the making of Apocalypse Now, is how Francis Coppola used helicopters from the Philippine Army because the United States Army wouldn't cooperate with the making of a movie about Vietnam. But the government kept wanting the helicopters back to fight a civil war against communist insurgents. Tell us some of the ways that kept disrupting the shooting of Apocalypse Now.
It was a very disruptive situation because the Army would send out their helicopters and whatever pilots they wanted to send out, and the pilots would be different every day, so they hadn't rehearsed. They didn't realize what it was like to fly in through filming situations, and they would sometimes they'd fly too high and they wouldn't be in the camera shot, or they just wouldn't realize what was involved in really performing for the camera, so to speak. So they would lose many shots because the pilots wouldn't be flying in the right place to be seen in the camera. And then the next day, you know, by the time they finally learned how to do it, the next day they'd send different pilots. And then very frequently they would call the planes away. They'd be all set up for a shot. Everyone would be out there on the location shooting, and they would get some radio communication that that four of the helicopters had to leave for, you know, military reasons, or some days all of the helicopters, or some days they would be out there ready to work and expecting 8 helicopters to be provided, and only 2 would show up. So it was a very difficult part of the production, and it cost, you know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars in lost footage and waiting for the helicopters to come that never came.
During the making of Apocalypse Now, you sent your husband a telex telling him he was becoming like Kurtz and creating his own Vietnam with a supply of wines and steaks and air conditioners. And you sent copies of this telex to the set designer, the cinematographer, and the production manager. Why did you do that? I mean, something must have really been working on you for you to not only telex Francis, but to telex the people who he worked with.
Well, at that moment, in my opinion, I was really concerned that the whole thing was going too far and had the potential of tipping over the edge. And that was just my response to the situation at that point in time. And I mean, now we're looking back at it, and so it doesn't seem so appropriate. But in the intensity of the moment, that was the moment where I just felt I had to speak out and give my opinion. And all throughout this project, it kept going, you know, closer and closer and closer to the edge, it seemed like. And in fact, I felt the forces and the pressure on Francis were so profound that I was very worried that he wouldn't be able to withstand all of those pressures. That was my one, you know, really deep and major concern, is that somehow it would just push him over the edge in some way. And in fact, he did collapse at one point and faint. And there was a moment where I was concerned, you know, that he might have a nervous breakdown or something. But he is a strong person, and after a couple of days, he was able to get his strength back and get his balance back and go on with the project and complete it. But there were some very scary moments there.
Eleanor Coppola, recorded in 1992. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.